Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. So then, folks, Formula One is over and done with, so we can talk about all the other things in life that don't really matter. And the first thing of those is math tests. Sundaram, what's your worst ever score in a math test? Be honest.
I think that's going to be me scoring 59 in my 12th grade.
Okay.
Doing chapters that probably never aren't of any use to me right now. But yeah, that's probably the lowest I've got. Thankfully, I've not flunked in maths. Otherwise, it would look very bad on me. But yeah, 59 in 12th
59 grade. 59 in 12th grade. For me, Kunal, the worst I ever got was a 35%. I failed the test that day. And part of the reason why is because I slept in the middle of a paper. And that tells you how much I love numbers. But what about you?
You know, now I'm in a bit of a pressure because I have flunked in maths. The only time ever that I actually have flunked in anything I've done. Oh, well, okay. Academically was in engineering mathematics. I think it was engineering mathematics 3. So it was in the semester 3. And, you know, mm-hmm. I scored 37 points, I think. And here's the funny thing. In India, in engineering, 40 is needed to pass, right? If you get 38 or 39, they just push you over the edge saying, okay, you may have worked hard enough.
Yeah.
So 40 is, if you get 40 means, dude, you actually were going to fail, but they passed you, hypothetically. If you get 37 means you were too bad. We couldn't have given you 10% marks more. Which, and this is where it gets fun. If you scored 41, they would say, you know what? You actually scored because you actually scored 41 marks to be given 41 marks.
Yeah, that grace mark system happens. But what I'm trying to tell here, folks, is that we have three most competent people in the entire world to talk about a special episode with only numbers of Formula One. That's right, three math failures to talk about numbers. But this is generally going to be so much fun because normally when we talk about Formula One, I mean, we can talk about the stories in so many different ways. But we were thinking, why tell you the story of the season that you already know in a way that you've already seen it? Words. Why don't we tell you that in terms of numbers? Which is why we're all trying to dissect the really fun numbers of the 2023 F1 season. Starting firstly with the man himself, F1 stats guru, the man who's the king of the stats, to whom numbers come up and speak automatically in the head. Sundaram, what's the weirdest stat of 2023 for you?
It's actually very, very recent. Yuki Tsunoda going on to lead 5 laps around Abu Dhabi. That's the most an Asian driver has led in all of Formula One. There's only been one other country apart from Japan that's led a lap, which is Thailand. Courtesy of Alex Albon. And the fact that he actually led 5 laps around Abu Dhabi is the most, is more than what Fernando Alonso and Charles Leclerc have combined at this track. Take that in.
And wait. Does that also not make Japan the country with the most laps led in all of Asia? Wait, no. Hang on. That makes...
It does. Takuma Sato also led, I think, two laps. So it's only Takuma Sato and Yuki Tsunoda who've led laps from Japan.
Interesting. So that's your weird stat. What about your one, Kunal? From 2023, there have been so many actually. We're trying to cut it down to 3 or 4. But we've had 10 really weird stats. Which one pops up for you first?
The one that really pops up for me, and I have to slightly explain it for context, right? This, I love to see the evolution in the Drivers' Championship, right? So in the race 1, which was in Bahrain, the top 10 actually had Valtteri Bottas, Pierre Gasly, and Alex Albon, 7th, 8th, and 9th. Okay. Race 2, Kevin Magnussen entered the top 10 of the Drivers' Championship. In fact, there were 12 drivers who were in the top 10. Lots of drivers on same points. The fun part here is race 3. Nico Hülkenberg was in the top 10 in the Drivers' Championship. A driver who finally finished closer, I think he was 16th or 17th in Abu Dhabi, was actually in the top 10. He was ahead of Charles Leclerc, Oscar Piastri, Lando Norris, the two Alpine drivers after race 3. Can you imagine Haas and Nico Hülkenberg, the whole return to you know, glory story in race 3 actually hit peak.
And from there, it's only gone one way. It's clearly not to the podium, unfortunately, still, for Nico Hülkenberg. It's only gone... I don't think it's gone down, because it's Haas. It never goes down from... I mean, how low can it go, right? I mean, seriously, how low can it go? It's just where it was. But actually, good on them. With 12 points, they're actually the team that have scored the highest as a last-place finisher in how many years, Sundaram? It's been, what, 6, 7?
In this point system, since 2010.
2010. Oh, not bad, actually. Not bad. Good on them. But I'll go for my weirdest stat of the year. And I know Logan Sargeant has been a very, very good driver towards the second half of the season. Probably not good enough to match many others. Yes, he's been outclassed by Alex Albon in qualifying. 22-0, which means the Undertaker's streak is still ongoing. But that's not the weird stat for me. The weird stat is that Logan Sargeant has finished 21st in a 20-driver championship. Or at least a championship that's supposed to be 20 drivers. And with that, he's also done something that Nicholas Latifi has never done. It's an achievement. It is. I mean, we all claim him to be the successor of Latifi. For all you know, Kunal, he's just one better. Always.
Well, I'm going to add another weird stat to this. And we cannot forget track limits in Austria. Because when the race was running, I was running through the race control time zone and I said, you know what, race control is actually on lap 8 while the drivers are racing on lap 13 and 15 and whatever. At the end of the day, we realized that there were over 1,200 track limit violations, investigations, whatever you call it, close to 150 penalties. Esteban Ocon, of course, had to, you know, he's the king of all time penalties. Maybe that's another weird stat. Or rather, that's a pub quiz stat. Like, which driver has most time penalties ever? You just have to say Esteban Ocon, whether you're drunk or not. But anyway, Austria, 1,200 track limit investigations, 150-odd penalties, time penalties, whatever that were given out. 14 changes in the final classification of the race order. So imagine this, out of a possible 20 drivers who finish a race, who can finish a race, 14 changes were made. And the changes came 5 or 7 hours later. But here's the best thing. One massive, huge embarrassment for the FIA, which technically you can say they've had one every quarter or sometimes one every other month. This was for that time, the big embarrassment.
So that happened. Wait, that happened in Austria, where the classification was finalized roughly 5 hours later. I think the same happened after the race in Austin as well, right? Because I remember waking up in the morning and seeing that Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc had lost their positions. They had been disqualified. So, yeah, like you said, correctly, it happens once in a quarter or at least once in 6 months.
I think these days they're actually making it faster, because after Austin, the season has just ended and they have issued the most generic statement in the world. Suppose you're unaware about Formula One, right? Suppose you don't read the articles. What if one fine day you wake up to a statement that says the FIA are investigating someone who was in contact with also someone for leaking some confidential information at some point in time? What do you mean by that? What are you even investigating? Who are you even talking about, and why, and what's the subject? The FIA, well, let's be honest, they are great at what they do, but sometimes things do slip over. But these are the weird stats. That's just one part of it, folks. Now, on the Inside Line F1 podcast, that's our aim. We tend to bring in all these weird and crazy things that you tend to miss. And yes, while in all of our years of covering motorsport, myself doing lots of MotoGP, by the way, my name is Somal Arora, in case you missed it, joined by F1 Stats Guru and Kunal Shah, the former marketing head of Force India, now an FIA accredited F1 journalist for the Viaplay Network in Norway. We folks normally tend to cover so much of motorsport during the year that we just need some sort of break at the end where we can cover all the missed stats. But I think now that we've covered the weird and stupid ones, I think we should really go to the point. Actually, what do we see when it comes to Max? I am left speechless. It's very, very clear, isn't it, Sundaram? I just can't find the right words whenever I have to talk about Max, which is why on this podcast this year, I just haven't spoken about him. So I'll leave the two of you to talk about Max now. I just can't do it.
It's the typical 2023 season where I think we've not seen much of him on track as well. So there's a lot of other drivers who've actually hogged all the limelight when it comes to on-air broadcast. We've not seen much of Max as well, but I think what we'll definitely remember Max this year is for the numbers. And for a driver who's often said that he doesn't really care about numbers as much, I'm just wondering, 19 wins in a season, 1,000 laps led, does that add really any significance to them? Because I think in Abu Dhabi, Max was really going for that record, 1,000 laps in a single season. And I'm just wondering, does that give a psychological advantage to them, or does it make them feel like invincibles? Because I think Manchester City is the only team to have ever scored 100 points in a single season. Whenever we talk about cricket teams scoring 400 plus, it probably just gives them that little of an advantage over their rivals. Is that what he was trying to prove? That, you know, 1,000 laps is going to be spoken about forever and ever. And that's what I'm out to prove.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe like Sachin's 100-100. Or maybe like Arsenal's Invincibles in a way. It doesn't mean much, but just it's a good flex to have. But that the 1,000 laps is just one of the many flexes. 19 wins, Kunal. Let's start with the headline ones. 19. For context, we had 22 Grand Prix this year. Lewis Hamilton, the best he's ever done in a season, is 11. The best Sebastian Vettel could do was 13. And yes, at that time, we had only 18 odd races. Whatever, call it what you want. But 19 wins. You've got to go wrong on some days, right? Like, how do you not? And fun fact, out of those 22 races, there's only been one Grand Prix where Verstappen has not finished on the podium. And that is Singapore. The other races, every single one of them, he's been on the podium. And 19 of those, he's won. It's you sense the confusion in my mind, Sundaram. It's just...
No. Just throwing a little question to the both of you. In the last three seasons, when has Max Verstappen not finished on the podium whenever he's finished?
Hungary 2021.
So there's Singapore? Hungary 2021.
This year? 2023.
Singapore last year and this year? Last year and this year? Who won Brazil last
George
year?
Russell.
Russell.
Brazil, yes. So there are very few instances in the last three seasons where he's actually finished and not finished on the podium. This goes to speak how consistent he's actually been over the last couple of years.
I'm going to add some context here, right? And if you're a Max Verstappen fan, hello Netherlands. We know it's, you know, our podcast is one of the biggest podcasts in that market, English speaking podcasts in your market. If you're a Lewis Hamilton fan, please don't go away, because there are chances you will go to a pub quiz, Formula One pub quiz, in the future, in the near future, in the distant future. And 2023 is at one season, which is there for pub quizzes. You know, literally, Max Verstappen, all his numbers, you will be asked, you will be puzzled. Well, the good thing is, it's very easy to just... You remember most of the answers, who won most races, who won most races on the trot, who had most, race conversions, who had most this, most that. Yes, it's Max Verstappen. Who won Singapore? Remember, it's not Max Verstappen. Singapore was at one break between all Red Bull wins that happened in a season. But truly, 2023, for all the dominance, you may hit the driver, hit the tree. You may be LH44, Hamfosi. You may be whatever. You may be Max Verstappen fans, Orange Army, whatever you call it. This is that season for pub quizzes. And my favorite Max stat, and you know, comes from what I normally tell a lot of junior drivers: consistency is what gets you championships. So of course, he's had consistent consistencies on the podium, because he missed the podium once, which we know was in Singapore, right? But he was the only driver to complete all the races this season, right? I know Carlos Sainz did it a couple of years ago, if I remember that, right? And then, of course, we know the 10 races in a win, and then he's currently on 7 race wins on the trot again. So his consistency is literally just the top step of the podium. Max Verstappen has just given us a stats overdose in 2023.
And speaking of his consistency, along with the Inside Line F1 podcast, we had a rival podcast as well being very consistent. It was Cool Down Room with Max. And that tells you so much more about our consistency. We've been having episodes for every single week of the year and also in the winter. So stay tuned, folks. Lots of really fun guests are going to come to the podcast shortly. And even in the winter, we don't shut shop. But we'll be back after a short break. Stay right here. Welcome back, folks, to the Inside Line F1 podcast. And this is our stats special. Now, yes, while we all might agree that Verstappen is the one who's dominated proceedings and also the stats for this year, there are other things as well that we need to touch upon, including just how close Formula One has been this year. Now, yes, we might look at Formula One in 2023 and be like, drab. Yes, Verstappen has won every single thing. But let me tell you something about how close Formula One has actually been this year. Discount Max Verstappen and look at Formula 1.5. After the mid-season break, after Hungary, we've had 11 different races. We have 7 different Formula 1.5 race winners after Hungary in 11 races. That's not counting Max. That's counting Sergio Perez. Now, remove Max from the equation. Can you imagine 7 different race winners in 11 different races? That is the stuff why we watch the sport. And eventually, the championship was decided by how many points, Sundaram? 3? Formula 1.5 constructors?
Are you asking F1.5? I can tell you what happened in F1. 290 points.
But F1.5, right? 3 points separating the constructors' champions Mercedes to Ferrari. That is why we watch Formula 1. That is unbelievably good.
Yeah. And, talking of Ferrari, talking of F1.5, of course, the battle for P4 went all the way down to the wire in Abu Dhabi. Carlos Sainz actually lost 3 places in that one race. Leclerc gained 2 and Alonso, of course, gained 1. He was finally eventually P4 after the count back and whatever happened with Leclerc. But the battle for P4 was pretty fantastic. I know Williams and AlphaTauri were stuck in a battle for P7 in the Constructors' Championship. And Mercedes, I think, just finished 3 points ahead of Ferrari in the battle for P2, or since it's Formula 1.5, Sommel's favorite classification in the sport. I think Mercedes' 3 points ahead of Ferrari was the smallest margin for a runner-up since 2013, when Mercedes actually finished ahead of Ferrari for P2 by just 6 points that year. So Formula 1.5, of course, was absolutely epic in every way that we consider, even more so for stats, right? And just goes to show that everyone who thought Formula 1 is not competitive, it's Max only winning. Let's remember, by race 3 or race 4, all the 10 teams had scored points in the championship. Yet, this was the first time ever in the history that all teams had scored a point in the championship, if I remember correctly. So, there are these markers which show that Formula 1 was close, competitive, etc. And while Max was winning, the sport was actually doing well. But yes, there are these markers that also show, like we said in the Max Verstappen segment, where he just dominated so much that you probably believe nobody else was even racing in 2023.
Yeah, that's a brilliant point. And while Max Verstappen was literally making everyone believe that this was a very one-sided season, sure it was. But then if you look at the rest of the teams, like we've already mentioned over here, it was much, much closer. And what stands out for me is the fact that Haas has scored 12 points. We've had several seasons over the past several years where the last place team has finished on 0 points. So this season has really given teams like Haas and AlphaTauri. AlphaTauri scored 20 points in the last 5 races. It's really given them the sort of provision to be able to score points, maybe not throughout the season, but then upgrades just kick in at some point of time, or you just have the regulations working for you maybe in the first half of the season. Like what happened with Aston Martin. They were really good in the first half of the season, and then they went really down in the dumps in the second half. So it's good that we're seeing these little swings in momentum and in terms of performance. And I really like that. I really like that we had in Abu Dhabi, we had a 4-way battle in the Drivers' Championship. We had 2 teams fighting it out for P2. We had 2 teams fighting it out for P4 and for P7 in the Constructors. So keeping aside Verstappen's dominance, I think though there were definitely some positive signs otherwise.
Now that you mention about that 4-way driver fight, Norris, had he got one more point, it would have been very crazy, wouldn't have been, Sundaram? I think it would have been what? A three-way tie with Alonso and Leclerc?
Yes, a three-way tie. Are we going back to 2007? but yes, it would have been a three-way tie with Norris, and Norris then would have been P4 in the championship, only because he had more P2s than anyone else. I think Lando Norris had more P2s than any driver this season, even more than Checo Perez.
Isn't McLaren's recovery by far the story of 2023? Max's dominance followed by McLaren's recovery. Absolutely. Again, let's break it down in numbers, since we've said we will explain this in numbers. And this is where it gets extremely fun. McLaren, we will remember them for their epic Austria upgrade. That was a team that started with James Key leaving or was asked to go. He went to Alfa Romeo Sauber. McLaren was still figuring out their, you know, they had a new team principal, et cetera, everything fall in place at the start of the season. Before Austria, before they got their big upgrade, they were sixth in the Constructors' Championship with only 17 points. Alfa Romeo was seventh, only 8 points away. Okay, it gets more fun. Alpine was ahead of McLaren by 24 points, right? So that's how bad McLaren's season was till Austria. Remember, that was a time when everyone said, oh my God, what's happened to them? They've gone backwards. Should Lando Norris even look to leave? And is he going to be a free agent if McLaren don't do enough, etc.? Then guess what happened? They got the upgrades in Austria. They were going to split it over three race weekends. And after Austria, so firstly, McLaren finished fourth ahead of Aston Martin. They scored 302 points, 22 points ahead of Aston Martin, right? Then they finished 182 points ahead of Alpine. So while being 24 points away from Alpine, they literally like scored 200 odd points more than Alpine after Austria. And in all of this time, while McLaren went from 17 to 302 points, which is almost 300 points, let's put it as that, Alpine went from, I think it was 9 points to 16 points. Sorry, not Alpine. Alfa Romeo went from 9 points to 16 points, right? That's how incredible was McLaren.
That's such a good point. Alfa Romeo literally crept all the way through, and that one McLaren upgrade tells you so much. So many teams complain, right? And also that brings up Mercedes in mind, about how it's so tricky to make that leap up from going where they are up towards competing with the likes of Red Bull. But McLaren have showed that with the right sort of car concept, you can make it happen. But on Alpine as well, I really want to touch up upon that. Actually, let's get to Alpine in a second, because that's more banter. We need to focus on the really interesting part. Mercedes.
No, let's do it. Let's do Alpine.
Okay.
Because the thing that really amuses me is in Abu Dhabi, literally every team had something to fight for. Red Bull were working towards Max Verstappen getting his 1,000th lap. And like I said, there was a battle for P2, for P4 and P7. And the one team that didn't have any challenge or any milestone or anything to look forward to was Alpine. Because they are placed in the championship so strategically by McLaren. So McLaren really left them hanging at the end. Like, yeah, you're there in a championship with 120 points. You can't go lower. You can't go higher. That was one team without any challenge towards the latter part of the season, only because McLaren got that much faster through the season.
Wait, are you talking about a Formula One team with nothing to fight for, no ambition, and they just are where they were for a very, very long time, and they don't even plan to move anywhere? That sounds like Alpine to me. I think the really interesting stat, Kunal, I think they're the team with the most number of team owners now, are they not? Rory McIlroy, Juan Mata, Michael B. Jordan, if I'm not mistaken, the Deadpool guy, Ryan Reynolds, and his partner who's also in Wrexham, couple of NFL footballers, one NBA guy as well, your mom, my neighbor, Sundaram's puppy. So many people own Alpine. Yeah,
and
most number of owners.
You know, right. And see, so which team had the most number of celebrity radio messages in 2023? Obviously, the answer is Alpine.
Alpine?
But, ladies and gentlemen, guys and girls, we now have a confirmation. I'm going to announce it at almost the 23rd mark of this episode or whatever. But the former Alpine team principal, who was also the former team principal of Aston Martin Formula One team, and the former team principal of Racing Point F1 team, and the former team principal of the Force India Formula One team, my former boss, Otmar Safnauer, is going to be on the podcast as a guest before Christmas. We will be recording before Christmas. The episode is out in the new year, but we will release snippets of that recording on social media, you know, in the off season. Look out for it. Subscribe. We promise you it's going to be a banger, if that's the word I can use.
Yeah, I think banger is fair. And the banger question that we really want to put to him is also, why are some teams, regardless of who they're managed by or who they owned by or what they're called or what power unit they have, somehow always manage to be where they are? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're talking about a French team. Which one? Prost. Of course, we're talking about Prost and Ligier, not some team called Renault. But we should talk about Mercedes, guys. Sundaram, Mercedes is an interesting thing, right? Because, yes, Mercedes are our Formula 1.5 Constructors champions. The way they did that was quite interesting this year, was it not?
It really was very interesting. It really was, because they finished runner-up in the championship, but they didn't win a single race. Ferrari won a race and they were P3 in the championship. And that led me to do a little bit of digging to see when has a team finished runner-up and not won a race. I mean, we've had a team finishing P3 in the championship and not win a race. That was Williams a couple of years ago. The early years of the hybrid era, the competitive years of Williams in the hybrid era. But Mercedes is actually the third team to finish runner-up without winning a single race. And the first one was BAR Honda in 2004. And then we had BMW Sauber in a very interesting case in 2007, because they finished third, actually, but McLaren got disqualified for a very little interesting piece of spying. And then Sauber was bumped up to P2. And then we have Mercedes.
Interesting, interesting. Crazy how it's all worked out eventually. And for Mercedes now, I wonder where they sort of stack up. Do we carry on with the sort of mediocrity that we've seen in the last few years? But guys, I have a question. What is your question, Kunal?
My question is, which team had no side pods, then half a side pod, and now it's back to full side pod? That could be a pub question 20 years down the line as well. Bad one? Daddy question, was it?
Wait. Do you want it in that order? Because then technically even Red Bull could count. Do you remember in the middle they also...
I was just going to say that. So Verstappen had half a pod, side pod in Baku. Perez had literally no side pods in Spa. And then it came back to, yeah, full side pods.
Wow.
I know what sort of pods I prefer. Inside line F1 pods.
Wow. Thank you. Yay.
Nice. So we're not talking about any other type of pods or whatsoever. It's meant to be a family-friendly podcast. But which is why we should also talk about Sergio Perez in slightly minced words. Guys, Sergio Perez, let's not mince our words, right? He wasn't the best this year, very clearly. And unfortunately, we didn't quite see the best of himself. I mean, compared to Max, really, there was no competition. But the part that aches the most for me is seeing Sergio Perez himself not being able to perform at the level where we know he can perform. So I want to bring this to you, Kunal. What is the one Sergio Perez stat that stands out the most for you this year? Any good thing, any bad thing, any sort of surprise that the numbers show?
So firstly, the stats will show that he made progression, right? He finished third in the championship last year. He finished second this year. How he got there is not what history will remember or specifically, right? But the one stat that really stands out for me was he scored 285 points in total, which is just 34% of Red Bull's overall points. So literally, Max Verstappen single-handedly could have won Drivers' Championship and Constructors' Championship, something we've seen. I think Sebastian Vettel is the only other driver to have done that in recent history as well. But Sergio Perez's tally of 285 points, so I should say just 285 points, is the second lowest points tally for a runner-up in the hybrid era, right? It's actually not very tough to guess who was the lowest, right? Valtteri Bottas actually scored fewer than that in that, you know, season that was impacted by COVID, right? He scored just 223 points. So yes, I think COVID impacted season was just 17 races, right? If I can remember. Mm-hmm. But either way, that's just the Checo math. And I know we've got a lot of listeners in Mexico. We really hope Checo's back with a bang. He said just a few days ago, I was third 2 years ago. I was second this year. This is one step I need to make forward. And that's finishing first. That's going to be my target next year.
You know, for me, this was probably a season where it was a very good opportunity for Checo Perez because he had the fastest car on the grid and not many other drivers or teams were really battling it out for P2. So P2 was largely just his for the taking and he's kind of just dropped it because if you see, they've had only one front row lockout this year, Red Bull, and that's astonishing. When you talk about a season where Red Bull and Max Verstappen had dominated so much, Red Bull have had only just one front row lockout and they've had only 6 race 1-2s, which is far, far fewer or lesser than what Mercedes had, say, for example, in 2015. In 2015, Mercedes had 15 front row lockouts and 12 1-2s. It just goes to show so much how that team in general, both their drivers were doing so well and consistently. And kudos for Nico Rosberg or Valtteri Bottas, what they were doing at that time in Mercedes. Apart from Lewis Hamilton racking up all the wins, the second driver was also doing his fair job of getting as much points as possible. And Checo Perez didn't do as much a good job as he would have liked to.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the exact numbers, it feels so, so absurd to see. Now, Williams, obviously, they had a 96% to 4% point split. Albon scoring the majority. Aston Martin, Alonso scoring 73%. Stroll scoring 27%. These are two drivers, Stroll and Sargeant, we always talk about in that sort of a negative light. McLaren, yes, Norris scored 67% of their points and Piastri 33%. But also, that's partially skewed because Piastri normally did very well in the sprints and not very well in the GPs. But Sergio Perez only scoring 34% of Red Bull's points this year. I know it was a phenomenal year by Max, but to make it happen, it also took a really bad one from Sergio as well. Here's to hoping that he's a lot better next year as it goes on. Now, the last few things that we have to talk about, folks. What really comes to mind, Kunal?
So, you spoke of sprints and Oscar Piastri, right? Oscar Piastri, actually, I like that whole thing that he was learning how to drive a Formula One car slow. That's what Mark Webber kept saying all the time. I don't know why I said Max, but either way. So Oscar's tally of 97 points is the highest for any rookie, again, in the hybrid era, surpassing Alexander Albon, who scored 92 in 2019 with Toro Rosso and Red Bull. So that's a bit of a skewed point there. But we spoke of sprints and there are just 5 drivers who have won sprints in the history of Formula One. Max Verstappen, 7 wins. Valtteri Bottas with 2 wins. George Russell with 1. Checo Perez with 1. And Oscar Piastri with 1 win. Can you imagine? No Ferrari driver in this. No Leclerc. No Carlos Sainz. And of course, no Lewis Hamilton. But we know that he isn't really the best. Well, he doesn't have the best kind of stats in sprints as he does in the Grand Prix format, right? Which is something we've all grown up to seeing, which is the Grand Prix format.
Yeah, exactly. And we're now going to have more and more and more and more of sprints as well at more and more circuits designed not for sprints, including Miami.
Yeah.
Why do we have a sprint in Miami?
Yeah, I think they're paying for it. They want more celebrities, more action. I don't know. I got to say this. I'm going to read out that stat. So Formula One, when they confirmed sprints and, you know, they said sprints are actually great way to go, seeing a great jump in viewership. They were comparing FP2 viewership with qualifying viewership. Obviously, that's not a fair comparison to make ever. Nobody's ever going to watch FP2 more than they'll watch qualifying. But we were on McLaren. McLaren, for the first time since 2012, have scored 300 points, if my memory is correct, which is another great stat for the McLaren fans. McLaren has renewed with Mercedes, which is always a bit of a surprise. It's, you know, how did McLaren not get a partnership in any way possible? But that's just down to McLaren. But yeah, I think I'm pretty excited to see how many of these stats will we actually remember. When we sit down to decode them, it's so much fun. But my goodness, these are like stats overdoses in every way.
100%. So let's end on a few really wild and crazy ones. Again, Sundaram, what's your really, really wild stat to end on? I think 1,200 track limit investigations has to be one. 14 changes in final classification has to be one. But in Las Vegas, we achieved something amazing with the manholes. I think I'll put it this way. I have a question for all of you. How many manhole covers does it take? I know we're going back to manhole covers again. We did 30 minutes of it in the Las Vegas episode. But how many manhole covers does it take to disappoint a team full of 1,000 Italians and a million people watching worldwide? Know the answer?
One.
Exactly.
One
manhole cover. It's the most crazy scenario that we've had in 2023. But that's just another wild number. But guys, speaking of other headline numbers as well, Formula One this year has seen the rise of an incredible champion in Max. We've seen new markets breached out. We've seen Formula One invest $500 million into a pit building. We've seen Jacques Villeneuve getting married. We have seen... What else, Sundaram? We have seen...
One Punch.
No, I was...
One punch? Two punches, actually.
One punch?
Was it one or was it two?
A punch and a shove.
A punch and a shove.
One. Fair. One plus one free.
and a mullet. And a goatee as well.
And a mullet and a goatee yeah, all of that. But just coming back to the wild stat, something just popped up in my mind. Max Verstappen has won 44 races in his last three championship winning campaigns. 44 is Lewis Hamilton's race number. And I looked at Lewis Hamilton's recent stats. In his last three championship winning seasons, he scored 33 wins, which is Max Verstappen's race number before he took on number one. Just putting it out there. Uh-huh. Doesn't mean a thing. Yeah, but just thought I'll put it out. Fun. A fun one.
And I hope you had as much fun in this episode as we did, folks, because clearly we've all been just laughing and smiling all the way through. But yes, as we all mentioned, big things coming from the Inside Line F1 podcast. We have so much more. Otmar Safnauer is coming. We're going to do more live events in Mumbai. There's going to be our Inside Line F1 parody awards as well. And in case you like the banter and I like to say banter and BS normally, but that's what it all is. And we have so many more fun banter and BS awards coming up for you. Categories like the worst driver, the most forgettable moment of the year, the most stupidest penalty, stuff like that. Not the conventional, who do you think is your best driver? Not that sort of gaga. So we're going to have that next week, along with many, many more exciting episodes. So subscribe to the Inside Line F1 podcast, folks. It's been a pleasure doing these episodes for you, and I hope that you reciprocate the same energy. See you, folks. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.